Welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. More than two dozen bills in response to sexual predator Larry Nassar are moving from a state house committee to the full house and then back over to the Senate today. Nassar, of course, is the former Michigan State University sports doctor who will likely spend the rest of his life in prison for sexually assaulting his patients. Here with us now is Republican Representative Clint Casto, chair of the State House Law and Justice Committee. He's been leading the negotiations in the House over these bills. Representative, let's start with the statute of limitations. You've extended the statute of limitations for future victims. You've gone from age 21 years in the Senate bill to 28 years old. Why?
On the criminal side, here's what we did. On the criminal Senate Bill 871, we went from 10-year statute of limitations to 15 years. If you were an adult, it's 15 years from whenever the incident happens. If you're a minor, then it's 28 years old or 15 years from when it happened, whichever is later. Now, that's the criminal side. So we're improving our criminal statute of limitations, making sure that prosecutors and law enforcement have the tools to be able to hold accountable and bring to justice those perpetrators. On the civil side, that's 872. What we did was take it from 2 to 3 years or 1 year after you become the age of majority, so 19 if you were a minor, to 10 years or 10 years from when you become the age of majority. So if you were a child and you were abused and sexually assaulted, you have until the age of 28. And if you were an adult, you have 10 years from whenever it happened. So we put that in line with looking at policy, looking at what other states did, and then talking to experts and talking to advocacy groups. We talked to the Michigan Coalition to End Domestic and Sexual Violence, and they were all in support of these two bills. So from a statute of limitations program, statute of limitations view, you have an increase for more holding accountable the perpetrator and bringing him to justice and behind bars. And from a civil side, you have the ability to make sure that we're there for survivors, and we're expanding the statute of limitations to allow them justice to be able to have their civil remedy.
And this is for future victims. Now, I want to look at retroactive lawsuits for abuse going back to 1997. The House has tightened up the Senate bill by only allowing cases involving physicians who try to pass off assault as medical treatment, which seems tailor-made for Nassar survivors. How about victims of coaches, teachers, Roman Catholic priests? Why don't they get the same chance to retroactively file a suit?
You know, those are a little bit different, and here's why. Because, first off, we had 12 people on the committee, and all the retroactivity piece was put in question as a matter of policy as to what to do. Initially, there wasn't any support, really, minimal support, I should say, for the retroactivity piece. And that's the process of looking at the committee and deliberating and answering questions and asking questions about why and what purpose the statute of limitations serve, and what about retroactivity? And retroactivity is a tricky topic, because why should there be, or why shouldn't there be, or were the statutes in place as law, weren't they constitutional? And they were. And there are some questions as to the constitutionality. There are some cases that say retroactivity on civil claims are okay. Some are indirect at that. But here's the bottom line. When you look at the situation with Larry Nassar, we heard from one of the survivors, and she indicated that she was conditioned and she was essentially brainwashed to believe that what was happening was a medical condition. She had questions about what actually was happening, but based on conversations with others, they conditioned her, and Larry Nassar conditioned her to believe that this is medical treatment. So when we're looking at retroactivity, we said, wait a minute, we are including a tolling prospectively, which means this, that we put in a provision that when you find out that a sexual assault occurred, you have 3 years from that time, even if it's beyond the statute of limitations, to bring forth a claim. So we tried to take that because of the medical scenario. So that's how we looked at the retroactive part that says, as a matter of fairness to somebody who would have been conditioned, would have been brainwashed to believe that this was a medical treatment, an avenue for a recourse in the civil justice system should be there. And that's how we ended up with that.
Representative Casto, let's pivot over to mandatory reporting, which would legally require certain people to report suspected instances of sexual assault or abuse. To whom exactly? What's in your bill? Who would they report it to?
Well, how it works, actually, it's not reporting instances of sexual abuse per se. It's what it is reporting instances of child abuse and neglect. Under the law right now, the intent of it is that teachers, health professionals, doctors, individuals that have a professional capacity who are able to identify child abuse and neglect will call up the Department of Health and Human Services and Child Protective Services, say, look, whoever's the guardian or parent, there's something wrong here. There's some type of abuse. Go look into it. And under the law, that includes reporting about the following, reporting about parents or guardians, teachers, teachers' aid, clergy, and what the way that is a little vague in the language is people who have the welfare, health and welfare of the child, and then it goes into teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So the intent is those people who are really monitoring those kids or really close to those kids and taking responsibility for them.
Who are mandatory reporters then under your new bills?
Essentially, we include individuals of a professional capacity that would interact with children. Many of the individuals have a license under the license and regulatory affairs. So let's say physicians assistants, teachers, healthcare professionals. And what we added was physical therapists, and we also added athletic trainers because they are licensed under law. That's just a few. There's mm-hmm. clergy in there.
How about paid coaches?
Paid coaches are not in there.
And why is that?
Well, I think it's difficult having a blanket law for paid coaches. I mean, where is the line drawn? Is it the Little League coach that makes $20 for just organizing the event? Or is it university coaches? And then, what are they actually reporting about? Because the Larry Nassar situation, I don't think, fits under this one. You don't call Child Protective Services that investigate the abuse by parents and guardians when it's a Larry Nassar, a physician, who's sexually assaulting them from their time as athletes. So it didn't fit in there. So here's what we did. We looked at another section. We said if the coach is there and they're dismissing and trying to brush off what someone is telling them, hey, Larry Nassar is sexually assaulting me, dissuading them from reporting. No, don't report. This is going to be bad for you. It's going to be bad for the program. Nothing's going to come about it. Then we make that a crime and a penalty. Because under the other statute, it would be unclear whether or not there would be criminal responsibility or sanctions.
Could this not lead us into a he said, she said situation? I'm wondering, would it not be clearer to frame it under mandatory reporting? The person was told of the abuse, the person is a mandatory reporter, so either they reported it or didn't, end of story. By having the using a position of authority to prevent reporting of abuse, does that get into that someone could say, well, I was giving her advice as a friend that she could lose her scholarship, that kind of he said, she said?
No, I don't think it does. And, you know, we have to stop looking at the legislator to say, let's make laws for people to do the right thing. You know, it is unfortunate that people don't, but we got to come together as a society. I mean, where are we going to draw the line from people doing the right thing? This coach at MSU, she's being told that the girls are being sexually assaulted, and she doesn't do anything. The Title IX people, they knew what was going on. They know what Larry Nassar was doing. They even said that we wouldn't have done it like this, but you know what? We think we'll give them a deference that this is medical treatment. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, folks. Let's get real here. When you see something wrong, enough is enough. Go to the authorities. Report it. Do something. We don't need laws to teach people to do the right thing. We need parents. We need teachers. We need good role models. And you can't legislate that, Cynthia.
You know, it was reported, Representative Kestel, that bills getting rid of governmental immunity in certain sexual misconduct cases didn't clear the committee. You said there wasn't enough support to move them. Why was that?
Because it puts taxpayers on the hook. That's why. Now, if there's intentional acts, you can make a civil claim. The governmental immunity doesn't preclude that. If there's gross negligence, you can make civil claims. But for your common negligence to say that somebody was negligent, so now all the taxpayers of the state of Michigan are going to be on the hook through the budget, there wasn't support for that. And frankly, when I talk to people, my constituents and the people in the state of Michigan, they said, no, we shouldn't be responsible for someone else's intentional actions. So based on that, based on other testimony that came through committee, there wasn't support for that piece of legislation.
Commerce Township GOP Representative Clint Kestel, Chair of the House Law and Justice Committee. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.